stand by.
Hi, this is Jeff.
And Gretchen.
And you're listening to This and That with Jeff and Gretchen, show number 54. Gretchen, it's Memorial Day while we're recording this. Happy Memorial
Day.
Happy Memorial Day to you. Happy Memorial Day to you.
Do you know what Memorial Day was originally called?
I believe it was called... But actually, you know, my dad emailed a little history on it then.
Mm-hmm.
But he said it was very controversial.
It was.
Yeah, but I don't remember what it was called.
It was called Decoration Day.
Decoration Day?
Uh-huh.
Like as a military decoration.
Right. The day of remembrance for those who died in our nation's service. And at the beginning, the South never recognized it.
Right. That's right.
That's right. So the first state to really acknowledge it was New York.
Because, well, my dad's email sort of suggested that the reason that they, the idea for the day was to commemorate the Union
right.
Army.
Well, no, it was originally Union and Confederate in Arlington National Cemetery, but it was recognized by all the northern states, so the South refused to acknowledge it, and they honored their dead on a separate day.
Really?
And surprisingly, Texas's day is January 19th. Isn't that weird? I never even heard of that.
Wow.
I've never even heard it mentioned.
And I've been here for 20 years, and I've never heard that before. So I'm going to start taking the day off.
Yeah, January 19th.
January 19th, in celebration of the...
South's Remembrance Day.
How about that?
Right.
Well, Susan was in the car with me as we went to this picnic today.
Mm-hmm.
And what she said before she came and picked me up, and she said before she did, she was listening to NPR, and they had all these very, very sad soldier stories, and she said she just... cried the whole drive because there's all these sad stories.
Yeah, it's been a lot of them on today.
Oh, really?
Yeah, a lot of soldiers, the Iraq war dead, 3,430 in the United States, 25,000 wounded, thousands more with mental health problems. It's just been a really hard day, you know, being in the middle of war. The most interesting tribute I saw was actually in Grant Park. Did you hear about
it? In Chicago?
Mm-hmm.
No.
It's called Combat Boots. It's an exhibit of 3,400 pairs of boots in formation.
Wow.
Yeah, it was really pretty eerie, actually, to look at it.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. It was very, very touching.
I didn't do anything in Memorial Day for as far as the real purpose of the day goes. I just went to a picnic and had a hamburger.
Well... Some people think that is what it's all about, barbecues and the beach. But
yeah.
And I actually saw, too, that they were interviewing, there's only 3 veterans left from World War I.
Oh, boy.
That's all there are that's living. And
wow.
So they're actually trying to document their lives. And
really?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And while we're touching on that, you know, on this past Friday.
Yeah.
So President Bush signed the war spending bill, and it's allocating $95 billion for Iraq and Afghanistan through September 30th. And so to date, we've spent $300 billion on the war. And so another $95 billion is going to be spent in the next 128 days. And I'm not really a math major, but I did work that out to be $750 million a day.
Wow.
I did do that right, right?
Yeah.
$95 billion for Iraq and Afghanistan, and it's 128 days until...
Sounds
the,
about
the
right.
You know. I can't even write that. I had to actually stop to figure out how to write that down to make sure I had enough
zeros. How many
zeros? There are 7 zeros.
Man.
75 and 7 zeros. That is a lot of zeros. That's a lot of money.
That's close to my billing rate.
Oh, can you imagine if we weren't spending $750 million a day?
What good we could do with that money?
On this very unpopular war, what we would be able to do with it.
Yeah.
Yeah. That part is sad, too, when you stop to think about that.
Yeah, yeah. I heard a good quote. It's like the, I think the... Democrats sort of suggest that the Republicans like to say that the Democrats just are weak-willed and don't like war.
Mm-hmm.
And the retort was, no, we just don't like dumb wars.
Yeah. But, you know, they still funded this and they didn't tie it to a withdrawal plan.
I know.
Which everybody kept saying, why don't you just keep giving it back to them
Well, like we said, they're going to lose the Democrats will lose the election because they are totally, total wimps.
Wussies, wimps, whatever you want to call
them. Whatever you want to call them.
Even the Republicans handing it to the Democrats on a platter, they still can figure out a way to do it, huh?
Yeah. Well, I did want to start the show with with it real fast. I did not send CB an email, but he's one of our listeners, and he wrote me a very kind email. I think I forwarded that to you.
Oh, that's your positive attitude in the face of adversity.
Yes, that's right.
Oh, that's Jeff.
But I've been crying all week long because I'm losing my job on Thursday.
Oh, you know another door is going to open.
I know. There's doors starting to open. I'm not actually too worried about it. But, you know, if desperate measures come, I will sign up and I'll go to Iraq. We'll be fine.
I'm not sure they'd want you with that bad eyesight.
Yeah, but it was a very nice email, and I have to thank CB for that. So I wanted to kick off the show with a cheery topic.
Oh, you mean the war wasn't enough? Well, you did mention it was Memorial Day, and you know, just the fact that the funding bill is...
Well, it's kind of fitting because Gretchen and I are sitting here kind of joking before the show about the fact that we both have our reading glasses on right now.
Because we are old. We are middle-aged.
Because we're old. Mm-hmm. So I wanted to tell you about some of the health things that happens as you get older.
Oh, good. Yeah, all the 20-year-olds will really appreciate this.
Well, this started off as something in the news, in the Dallas Morning News. There was a 77-year-old fellow, I won't name the names, and his 72-year-old wife. He killed his wife, shotgun, and then he killed himself. And it was basically because they had medical problems. In fact, he was her sole caregiver for about 10 years or so, and he was just diagnosed with some sort of heart problem as well. But here's what kind of grabbed me a little bit. The friends and the neighbors of these two old folks described them as a loving couple who were generous to all those around them. The guy was a former engineer at Texas Instruments who wanted to be a farmer. He had the best garden in Richardson. They would give away bags of the best tomatoes and cucumbers to their neighbors. The woman, known as Mrs. C, used to play the guitar and was a wonderful cook. She said she would clean the house while listening to Steppenwolf and took her son and his friends to the group's concerts. And anyway, they sound like they're not these isolated, weird people.
Right.
They sound like wonderful people.
Mm-hmm.
And
did they leave a note or anything?
I don't believe that they did, but the people that were investigating this looks like it. They believe that it was pretty obvious that they did this over health problems, and it was, you know, most likely agreed upon. So it got me thinking about euthanasia a little bit because
Dr. Kevorkian's out of jail.
Is he?
That?
I know.
Yeah,
I didn't know that.
He served 8 years, and he's out of jail, but he said he's not going to go back to assisting suicides.
He's not going to.
No.
How come?
Well, he doesn't want to go back to jail for another 8 years.
Yeah. Well, I just think it's a shame that this old, wonderful couple has to die like that.
Mm-hmm.
And why can't they die in dignity? You know, and kind of choose the right time to die. There's a lot of questionable things about euthanasia, but I found sort of a list of some of the reasons for what they call voluntary euthanasia and reasons against voluntary euthanasia that are kind of generally acceptable as the pro and cons. Reasons for would be kind of choice. Proponents emphasize that the choice is a fundamental principle for liberal democracies and for free market systems. Quality of life is another pro because it's really, really hurts to live in pain.
Right.
Economics, cost, and human resources. Today in many countries there's a shortage of hospital space. That seems pretty wimpy reason. Moral, some people consider euthanasia to be just another choice a person makes, and for moral reasons, against it to be undue influenced by others. Blah, 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 there's a few others. Okay, reasons against euthanasia would be professional role. Critics argue that this could unduly compromise the professional's role of healthcare employees, especially doctors. They point out that every doctor must swear upon some variation of the Hippocratic Oath, which they interpret as explicitly excluding euthanasia. Obviously, there's moral issues. Some people consider euthanasia of some or all types to be morally unacceptable. This view usually treats euthanasia to be a type of murder, and voluntary euthanasia is a type of suicide, the morality of which is a subject of active debate. There's theological reasons against it. Voluntary euthanasia often has been rejected as a violation of the sanctity of human life. Specifically, some Christians and Jews argue that human life ultimately belongs to God, so that humans can't make those choices, because it's God's choice to make.
Hmm.
And then feasibility of implementation. Euthanasia can only be considered voluntary if a patient is mentally competent to make the decision. In other words, has a rational understanding of options and consequences and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, all given all that, I still fall on the side of pro-euthanasia.
So you think he was right to do what he did?
No. Well, I think, I mean, whether he had a right or not, I guess there's no stopping that. I think it's drastic, and I think it's an awful end to what were probably two real positive lives.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think somehow a more dignified way to get out of life, to choose for them to get out of life. Rather than something so violent and really ugly and really disturbing for the family,
mm-hmm.
I think.
Mm-hmm.
I think it'd be more just. I'd like to live in a society, I think, that would, you know, offer that option. Now, obviously, there's got to be a lot of infrastructure in place, things like living wills,
mm-hmm.
potentially, things like psychological examinations,
mm-hmm.
To make sure that people do understand the consequences of this vote.
Of the end.
Yeah, the consequences. What do you mean, the consequences? Death.
That is it.
So I also did a survey of where you can do this.
Oh, I was wondering about that, because I'm pretty sure the Netherlands, being the most liberal country in the world, would
are
the ones that say yes.
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 Yes, that's
absolutely
correct.
Maybe like three or four more. There aren't very many,
that's
right?
Kind of it. The Netherlands, in 2002, the Netherlands legalized euthanasia. And then in Belgium, the Belgian parliament legalized euthanasia in late September 2002. So it sounds like roughly the same time. In Australia, they don't legalize it, but in one of the states, Australia is what they call Northern Territory state, they have a Rights of the Terminally Ill Act of 1995. And this was voided, actually, by an amendment by the Commonwealth to the Northern Territory. Those are not guaranteed, but they're not guaranteed by the Australian Constitution. However, before the Commonwealth government made this amendment, three people had already practiced legal. So it looks like, if I'm reading this correctly, it was legal for a little bit of time in one state, and then they overruled that.
It.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Switzerland is kind of weird. It's deadly drugs may be prescribed to a Swiss person or to a foreigner where the recipient takes an active role in the drug administration.
Hmm.
More generally, Article 115 of the Swiss Penal Code, which came into effect in 42, considers assisting suicide a crime if and only if the motive is selfish. The code does not give physicians a special status in assisting suicide. However, they are most likely to have access to suitable drugs, and a medical establishment have prohibited highly liberal physicians from prescribing deadly drugs further. When an assisted suicide is declared, a police inquiry may be started. Since no crime has been committed in the absence of a selfish motive, these are mostly open and shut cases. Prosecution happens if doubts are raised on the patient's competence to make an autonomous choice. That's kind of interesting.
Mm-hmm.
In the United States, it appears to be legal in Oregon.
That's right.
Oregon ballot measure 16 in 1994. In California, they have a Compassionate Choices Act, was introduced in 2005, patterned after Oregon's Death and Dignity Act, but it was defeated in 2006, and it's been launched again.
Hmm.
So that's still a work in process. And in Texas, believe it or not.
Oh, jeez, Texas.
I know. In 1999, the state of Texas passed the...
Only if you do it with a shotgun here in Texas.
That's the only acceptable way of doing it. The state of Texas passed the Texas Feudal Care Law. Under the law, in some situations, Texas hospitals and physicians have the right to withdraw life support on a patient whom they declare terminally ill. And this has actually came up in a... it's very rare. But that was passed in 1999. So actually, in this particular area, Texas is a little bit more progressive than most other states in the United States. So, anyway.
That's a very specific case, though. Yeah.
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 Wow. Was that our upbeat topic?
So, are you ready for me to administer your euthanasia?
No,
put you out of your reading glass misery?
A long way to go. But I definitely, if I get to that point, I would like to be able to make a choice, you know.
Me too. I'm kind of hoping that by the time, 100 more years? That at that point
we'll have a nice little shot. Can make you high and then say goodbye.
Yeah, actually, that would be great. Have a great time for a little bit and then go.
Mm-hmm.
That'd be pretty cool.
When I get older, losing my head many years from now, will you still be sending me a Valentine? Birthday greetings, bottle of wine. If I'd been out till 2:45, would you lock the
door. Will you still need me? Will you still feed me when I'm 64?
So, hey, you know what it was 40 years ago today?
Memorial Day.
No, well,
a day that will live in infamy.
Typically, yeah, that's true. But 40 years ago today, Sergeant Pepper
lost his formed
Pepper
a band.
Sergeant Pepper taught the band to play, right?
Sergeant Pepper taught the band to play.
Lonely Hearts Club Band came out in 1967, and it is considered by some as, you know, the Beatles' most famous achievement, but it also pretty much rocked the music industry and how music was made.
Right,
yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so it was pretty interesting. I do remember listening to it when I was about a couple years older, but this was the only album that the Beatles did not tour for. They spent more than 4 months in a recording studio.
No, that's
studio.
Not a true statement. This was the first album the Beatles did not
tour
for.
Oh, that's true. I'm sorry, yeah. It was the first album. Oops, excuse me, I didn't realize you were such a Beatles fanatic.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Oh, yeah.
All right, they spent 4 months in a recording studio on one project, and it was a concept album. It was technically the first concept album, and it was unheard of up
right,
until this point.
Right.
And it wasn't just how good the music was. The album cover itself was an amazing collage by Peter Blake.
Yeah.
And it showed the band in the gaudy mock military costumes presiding over the burial of the old Beatles, and then all over it were cultural icons in the background. So you could look hard and find Marilyn Monroe or Karl Marx or Bob Dylan or Mae West. And it was the first time lyrics were printed on the back of an album cover.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yep. And it was filled, even though they recorded it in their primitive studio, with overdubs, backward tape loops, snippets of orchestral crescendos, and 13 amazing songs, of which the ones that still really hold up today, and probably the most famous is A Day in the Life, which is a 5-minute song at the very end.
Beautiful song.
Yeah, an amazing song. And 3 years later, the band disbanded, but this has been called the most influential single album for the way that lyricists, producers, and fans go about consuming and making popular music. It was, instead of minimizing cost and making it as quickly as possible, the actual band members exerted control over the studio production. And that's how it's been done ever since. So that's the significance of Sgt. Pepper, as you probably know, being a Beatles fan.
And you know, back in the day, all those fancy production techniques that they used were all sort of tape and limited track machines. And I mean, there was a lot of real hands-on work to get that stuff going. And it really is incredible. I know that they brought in an orchestra, A Day in the Life. They had an orchestra in there. And it's a beautiful album. You know, it was the very first, I think it was the first album that I ever personally bought as a kid.
Really?
And I didn't buy it in 67 when it came out. I would have, by the time I started buying albums, I was probably 12 or 13 years old. So that would have been, you know, early.
A couple years later.
A few years later.
Yeah.
But, well. But you know, you talk about the lyrics on the side and this great artwork.
Mm-hmm.
And even their dorky things that they dressed up in, it looked cool.
Mm-hmm, it did.
And the album was really neat because it folded out.
Yes, it
and,
did.
And, you know, the pleasure, I mean, I don't want to get too nostalgic, but of course the pleasure of having this huge album and the fold out and the lyrics is totally lost today because we don't have that now. You buy a CD or actually you don't even buy a CD anymore, right? You just buy it on iTunes and you never see any packaging. And but special projects like that, the packaging has a lot of meaning to it. But it's a great CD. And I remember my parents playing A Day in the Life when I was a kid, and I knew it was something special. And it still is.
So I was 40 years old. Wow.
Yeah. Well, you know, talking about that a little bit, I went to the what was the music festival just recently up in Richardson, the Wildflower Festival. And it was very interesting because I saw a lot of good, fun retro bands from the 80s. One of the bands was John Waite.
Oh, yeah, I remember him.
And he played with the Babies as well. A lot of good songs, great voice.
Yeah, that's a nice one.
So John Waite had this, you know, it was really a good music performance, Gretchen. The band was good. They were tight. They didn't have fakey instruments. They were very good. But listening to the music, the lyrics, and even some of the arrangements, it just had this dated quality to it. And I kind of found that surprising. I didn't expect it. And then they had a laser show that I went to that same day, same night, with to the music of Pink Floyd. And it was really a lot of fun. They made you wear these glasses. And
laser shows are always to the music of Pink Floyd.
I know, I know. But you sit there and listen to that music, and there's nothing about Pink Floyd that is dated. And I don't know if I ever quite made that association yet. And I don't even know, even as a musician, I'm not quite sure how to qualify or describe exactly what makes it not dated. But from the lyrics down to the arrangements, it sounded every bit as vibrant to me as I'm sure it did. I'm sure it just must have knocked people out 30 years ago.
Right. When it was so avant-garde.
But it's so vibrant today where John Waite's music... Now, John Waite's music, okay, it's not a fair comparison. That's always been more lightweight. But I'm just saying John Waite's stuff sounded dated. It couldn't make it today.
Hmm.
Where Pink Floyd...
Still stands up.
Still kicks. Mm-hmm. Kicks anything's butt that's out today. I mean,
right.
It's just really great music. Really great arrangements. Really great stuff. So anyway.
Really good lasers.
And the Beatles are that way too. And whenever I hear a Beatles song on the radio, or sometimes the iPod picks me a Beatles song, even the arrangement just pops out at me and it makes me happy.
I think that's true of the Rolling Stones too, though.
Oh, yeah.
Most of their stuff is still very, you know.
Yeah. Yes, it is.
Yeah.
It's
the good old days.
The good old days. So, okay, we're going to switch topics now. Do you remember a couple weeks ago I had a list of the man drugs that would come in junk mail and the headings?
Oh, yes.
All right. So I'm not going to do this every week, but there's a few that came in over the last two or three weeks that literally made me laugh.
Are you sure that you don't subscribe to some of these because you keep getting so many? I don't get any of these.
Really?
None of these. No.
Do you check your spam folder? Because that's where they are.
Yeah. I looked in the spam folder, and there's nothing like this in
all
there.
All right. So some of these are a little bit graphic. So for the next 3 minutes or so, if you have kids in the car, you know, turn it down. Okay. First one is, fuck much, change lifestyle, man. That just made me laugh. Your life sucks without real fucking.
These are the subject lines?
That's the subject line. Again, it just made me laugh, so I thought I got to talk about this in the podcast. Be proud of the bulge inside your pants with Fertility Patch RX. All right, this is one that really got me funny. Your dick is not only for pissing.
Well, it's good to know it's multi-purpose.
That's right. Turbo penis. Maestro penis. Now, they had me with maestro.
Oh, like maestro?
Maestro. I'm sorry. Maestro. That's right. Grow your package today and then want to be a perfect lover immediately. So, anyways, that's just an update. You can turn the radio back up.
In case you were missing some of them.
they're very clever.
Oh, that's funny. Well, let's see. What would we like to talk about now? How about...
Can I talk about big houses?
Sure.
All right. McMansions are propping up all over.
Every city's got them.
Every city has them.
Big problems everywhere.
1 in 5 American houses had at least 4 bedrooms in 2005. 1 in 5. That's up from 1 in 6 in 1990. Now, what's funny and amazing about this is it's despite shrinking families in most parts of the country and increasing costs for construction and energy. Houses with 5 or more bedrooms, that's huge, especially for families that don't have 5 kids anymore, were the fastest growing type in that time, in this century, adding to the nation's consumption of resources and reputation for excess. And it really is a reputation for excess. Part of me feels like, God, this is horrible excess. You know, I grew up in, how many bedrooms do we have? I don't know. But, you know.
Six.
Okay, we had 10 bedrooms. We lived in a mansion, but no, I don't know. I guess we each had a bedroom, but okay, forget about that point. No, but it wasn't a 4-bedroom house. There was, and I don't know, it seems like it's excess. On the other hand, you hear all these stories about how our economy is awful and people are poor. Well, I'm sorry. If we're buying more house and spending more money and we have less kids, in other words, we don't really need them, clearly we must be doing okay.
Mm-hmm.
So in that case, it sort of makes me think, okay, that's kind of cool. That's as good of a harbinger as any of a good economy, we're buying more than what we need.
But it's also destroying the characters of neighborhoods. And that's why there's been ordinances all over the country.
Well, and now where I live, historical neighborhoods, yeah, absolutely. But, I mean, I think a lot of this is they're talking about the suburbs and new divisions. And that's where a lot of the houses are.
Oh, new subdivisions? Well,
yeah, and that doesn't destroy anything. They're kind of ugly anyway.
Yeah.
You know? So, you know.
But they do cost more to maintain and, you know, talking about cutting back to save the environment. Do you really need a house that big?
Right. Well, there isn't a lot of green consciousness. There's more greed consciousness. The biggest states with the largest houses was Utah, followed by Maryland, Virginia, Colorado, and Minnesota. Smallest was Arkansas.
Surprised Texas isn't on there. Everything you think of in Texas is big.
Well, Allen was, which is a far north suburb here, was number five of all cities.
Wow.
Yeah. But that was like the only, I think another Texas city made 95.
Wow.
Arkansas had the smallest share. I guess outhouses don't come in more than four.
Oh, now. Not every house in Arkansas has an outhouse.
I'm just kidding, our Arkansas fans. Don't turn us off. Everybody jokes about the, you know, what the heck. Now, the average household has shrunk slightly since 1992 to about 2.6 people. 2.6 people, Gretchen. That means the average household has 0.6 of a kid. So there's a lot of just dinks. No kids. The average new house grew by nearly 400 square foot. And it's about now 2434 square foot. Here's a quote from a realtor. You cannot sell a new house today with 1.5 bathrooms. Oh, come on. I don't believe that. There's a lot of houses I looked at in California that are 1.5 bathrooms. Even if only two people are in the house, they still want 2.5 to 3 bathrooms. Okay, I think this is an exaggeration. Because
it depends what neighborhood that guy's
in. It depends
one
market. Exactly, right. Exactly.
Because maybe that's true. Maybe it's all new houses, and so anything old wouldn't sell.
Sure, sure. In the new subdivisions. So the median home value has jumped from 2005, between 1990 and 2005, it jumped 40%, and now the median value is about $167,000. So I thought that was kind of interesting.
We're growing them bigger.
We're getting them bigger.
We're holding them bigger.
We sure are.
So, have you heard about the little town of Hooksett, New Hampshire?
Hooksett?
Yeah, Hooksett, New Hampshire has made the news this past week because this is the town that fired four municipal workers that had 46 years of service for gossiping about their boss. Did you
really?
Hear this?
No, I did not at all.
Okay, these four municipal workers were fired for gossiping. They were talking about their boss's supposed improper relationship between him and another employee. And the town is saying that the office was ripe with gossip, whispering, and an unfriendly environment. The environment was described as toxic, says one of the lawyers involved. So what really surprises me about this is that people are wondering, and you'd be surprised how many people don't know the answer to this, but if you are an at-will employee, can you be fired for gossiping? What do you think?
Well, I mean... I would think gossiping could get in the way of doing your work, and obviously you can get fired if you're not getting your work done. But as far as gossiping and getting your work done, I don't know.
Well, it's really simple, because if you are an at-will employee,
what's an at-will employee?
At-will means that you can... Hold on a second. Got it down here. At-will means that you don't have any kind of shield. You are not, say, example, a unionized employee. You can be fired for good cause, bad cause, or no cause. You don't have a contract, in other words.
Okay.
The only exceptions are you can't be fired because of your race, your age, your sex, your religion, your sexual orientation, or a disability. So, it just means that the boss can say goodbye whenever, and that is why it's at will. It's at the boss's will.
Okay, got it.
So you can be fired without giving a reason or a notice. And everybody's so surprised by that, but, you know, who do you know has an employment contract? I mean, nobody I know. Nobody I know works for a union. So we're all at-will employees. And,
right.
And some states are a little more pro-employee versus employer.
Right.
But still, an at-will employee means you can really be fired for any particular reason. The boss doesn't like how you glance at him one day. You know, you can go.
But it seems like I've always been raised or taught somehow that firing somebody is hard.
Yeah, you know, that's big companies.
There's a lot of legal mumbo-jumbo mm-hmm. because companies worry about... Right.
I think those are the states where it's more pro-employee. That's where I think it actually comes into it.
Because companies are afraid of being sued. And
right, absolutely.
Yeah.
So some of the other points here is that the law was saying that they have to be speaking as a citizen, not an employee, and that it has to be a matter of public concern, that they don't necessarily have a free speech benefit. It has to outweigh the disruptions that they would have caused. What they were really getting at, what they think they were gossiping about, is that this boss was favoring one city employee over another because he was supposedly having a relationship with her. So depending on whether this was workplace free speech, they would be protected whether they were talking maliciously, whether they were spreading a false rumor, whether they were discussing trade secrets, or whether it was a matter of public interest. So they all want their jobs back, and the city council is supposed to rule on whether they get them back or not. They don't think they would be employable anywhere else because of this now. So they are appealing to the city council. And
city council, that's because it's a government.
Yeah, because they work for the city.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So, just so you know, don't gossip.
Well, you know, I mean, there's something about being a professional.
Right.
Where you don't really gossip anyways. I mean, everybody gossips a little bit. It's kind of human nature, but professionals gossip less. It's just not a professional way to conduct yourself, you know?
As these women are going to find out.
Yeah. So. Wow, that's very interesting. Well, I came across a blog about dating.
Okay.
And actually, the blog is shutting down. It's called Kissin' Blog. I've been a subscriber for a while, but I never really go in and read it too much. It's a guy and a girl. They take turns kind of blogging about the single scene. I think the guy is from Australia and the woman from America or something like that. But they were friends.
Mm-hmm.
But anyways, they sort of had a joke in the blog, and I thought, wow, this is actually a pretty neat idea. It's called Single Mart, the grocery store for single people. Now, this could work in some markets. I'm thinking dense markets of single people like Manhattan or certain parts of LA, mm-hmm. San Diego, mm-hmm. the Bay Area, whatever. So instead of a tired voice greeting shoppers with daily specials on broiled chicken and adult diapers, we'd hear a schmaltzy guy announcing, check out aisle 10 and taste test the latest flavored lubricants. I like this. All produce would be in convenient single portion foods.
Uh-huh, there you go.
Except for toilet paper, peanut butter, and beer. You know? And Single Mart would be a fun grocery store for adults only. That's right. No more annoying children begging for chocolate in the exit aisle. So instead, you could have a drink at like the bar, while the hot ones fondle your goods and check you out. But I love it.
That is really a pretty clever idea.
I actually think there's something.
Everybody has to buy their groceries, and they could have, you know, little icebreaker games.
Right.
You know? You could have, you could do scavenger hunts. And
I think there's all kinds of fun things you could do. I sense a market here. I really do. Some markets.
Oh, I could see. Can you imagine in the gay parts of town?
Yeah.
Wow, that would be awesome.
Well, you know, it does seem like when I moved to Dallas, there were a couple grocery stores. They remodeled the one, but the one by the Village on Lovers and Greenville, that Tom Thumb, that used to be a much smaller grocery store. And that used to be known as kind of like the singles grocery store. But it wasn't anything formal. It just happened to have, you know, because it's by that Village apartment complex, mm-hmm. a little more younger single people there. And then I think, if I remember right, there was a grocery store in the gay part of town that was kind of known as the gay cruiser grocery store. But I don't even know about that anymore.
So why are they shutting down?
This blog, I think they just had been blogging for 2 years and sort of lost interest in it.
Uh-huh. So who reads your blog? I'm just curious.
Not that many people.
And how do you know that?
Well, I have subscribers. I have less than 20 subscribers, and, you know, People stumble into it maybe, but no, I don't think hardly anybody reads it.
Huh.
My family does. Do you read it? No. See? I mean, that's, you know, who reads my blog? No one.
Well, I was wondering, you know, the amount of effort you put into it.
I don't put that much effort into it. I blog every, once a week, sometimes zero a week, sometimes two times a week. But that's not that much effort into it. I'm not that insightful, you know. Well, I'm not. I just have little observations. But you can, as long as we're talking about my blog, you can see my blog either at thisandthatpodcast.com or it's the same thing. I just kind of repurpose it at my real blog, which is randomthoughts.jeffastrikeweb.com.
There you go.
There you go.
Plug for you.
Yeah. But don't expect too much. Yeah, it's just...
Well, don't expect anybody to spell your name, so...
Yeah, that's true. I'm hiding it well.
So, I know you've been doing some... you went to a movie, right? And you were going to review a movie. You talk about that. And
yeah.
I went to see a production of Camelot in Dallas last night.
Cool.
And what I thought was really interesting are the statistics of the person who reads the playbill. You know, the playbill is what you get when you go to sit down at the theater, and it has the
listing. I thought they gave you the Playboy.
Not the Playboy. Oh, Jeff, where's your mind? It's back and grow your manness hard, whatever. couple subjects back. No. Okay, who do you think the Playbill reader is? Just from your experience of going to the theater. Now, I believe Playbill is at every major city where there is a theater district.
Do you know what's interesting is I was telling Gretchen this beforehand, is I love musicals, but I haven't been to a musical in Dallas. But I am an opera season ticket holder, and I have been for years. So I know the opera Playbill audience is elderly. You know, I don't know what the musical... I would think the musical people would be a little bit younger.
Well, I don't think this is just musicals, is it?
You think
Playbill
that's everything?
Playbill is drama, too.
Yeah.
Yeah,
Playbill, you're right.
Playbill is drama.
Right,
yeah.
Right.
Well, surprisingly, the median age would be... us, 45.9.
Really?
Wait, okay, I'm looking around the theater going,
Where's my age? Where are they?
Where are the younger ones? Because doesn't median mean we're in the middle?
Yeah, exactly.
I was looking for them, and I didn't see them.
Hey, old-timer.
I know. So the annual income, the household income of the Playbill reader is $132,000. 74% own two or more cars. The median value of the residence is $476,000. 91% of the theater audience are avid restaurant goers. Most of them are professional, managerial, or executives. And the time spent reading Playbill, 10 minutes in the theater and 11 minutes at home.
Really?
Isn't that amazing?
That's about me.
I thought that was shocking.
That's very interesting. But now, of course, they're going to cite those statistics as being a little bit more rich and spending more time on the Playbill than... I mean, if they're going to bias it at all, they're going to bias towards that because they're trying to sell advertisers to
this
thing.
Right, right, right. And they want, you know, nice advertisers in
right,
there.
Right, right. So. Nevertheless, it's probably very valid.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why you have all the geriatric drugs in there. You do. Yeah. You do.
You do. Ambien.
Yeah.
Lunestra.
I've noticed that before.
No Viagra in here, though.
I'm surprised. They probably have a code of ethics or something. When you're in the mood...
You're not allowed to take a Viagra before you sit down at the musical theater.
Boing. All right, here's a little light topic. Here in Dallas, there was a 22-year-old man is accused of stealing a trailer truck full of Skittles. Do you know how much this trailer truck worth of Skittles with full of Skittles was worth?
Probably about $20,000.
You vastly underestimate the value of Skittles. $250,000. This is what blew my mind. What truck could have... I mean, I guess Skittles are very, very little.
Yeah, little.
You can get a lot of Skittles
in that.
So they were calling to a response, and apparently this guy was like taking the tires off the truck. This kid is like 22 years old, and he said... that the police, he told the police he had paid another, or he had paid another man $500 for the truck's tires and rims, and that's all. That's all he was doing. But they believe he had more. It had a total of 28 pallets of Skittles, but 7 were missing. So there's probably a lot of bootleg Skittles in this area. in the Dallas area. So just be careful, because you could be arrested if they catch you with the bootleg Skittles.
Oh, my goodness. Wow. So PC Magazine came out with a list of the 10 most common passwords for people's computers.
Really?
Can you imagine what they are?
I would think a lot of people would use their middle name or their girlfriend's name or things like that, but...
Yeah, that's true.
123 ABC?
ABC 123.
Okay.
Yep, that's one of them.
All right.
The number one most common password is password.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. Then second is 123456.
Okay.
Third is QWERTY, QWERTY, the keyboard.
Yeah.
Then...
very clever.
Then let me in. I thought that was silly.
Oh, that's funny. I never tried that one.
Monkey.
Really?
That surprises me. Monkey, yeah. Blink 182. Well, that also surprised me.
Huh.
And your first name.
My first name? They use Jeff?
Whoever. Everybody's first name. And then in addition to those, the things you're supposed to avoid are your birthday, your pet's name, your girlfriend or boyfriend's name.
Right.
Your street name, your social security number. Don't do that, you ninnies. And your favorite color.
Well, what I think is really funny is what they say. They recommend that you use, you know, a combination of capital letters, small letters, numbers, alphanumeric numbers and letters, and that they don't make any sense at all.
And who can remember that?
Right. No one. I would be interesting to see a survey of how many people actually do that.
Yeah.
Yeah,
because anytime I ever get one assigned that's like that and I can't remember it and I have to go look it up, it's such a pain.
Right. I know.
So try to change it immediately to password.
Well, a lot of times, I think a lot of IT, I don't think they do this too much anymore, but I remember a few years ago within companies when they would give you a new account for something, the default would be password.
Mm-hmm.
Now the default is something cryptic usually.
Right. You're supposed to reset it right away.
You're supposed to reset it right away.
Mm-hmm. Or user 1234. That's what it is at our company.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, now I can go in and break into all kinds of systems where you work.
Oh, yeah, there you go.
It's going to be pretty fun. So, yeah, so I did see a movie I wanted to tell people about a little bit. It's on my blog. So if you're avid readers of the blog, you probably know this already. But I saw a movie called Once.
Mm-hmm.
And it was about two basically street musician type people in Dublin. It is a movie. It's not a documentary, but the musicians are real musicians. And it's a guy and a girl. We don't even know their names. We just know them as guy and girl.
Okay.
And it's mostly kind of a music-driven movie, but very for sort of folky amateur music.
Uh-huh.
And the music is, in fact, I just bought the soundtrack today on iTunes. The music is so good. And the story is very quirky and cute and low budget and very, very nice. It's hard not to like the movie, and I highly recommend it. It is an indie movie. It opened up, I think, I don't say wide release, but in most towns that have indie movie theaters this week. So go out and see it.
You recommend it?
Highly recommend it.
Okay.
Very highly recommend it. And if you go to Rotten Tomatoes and look it up, I saw one reviewer out of 100 that didn't like it.
Well,
so that's pretty high.
So have you ever been interested in learning how to predict the weather or learning how to be a top-selling merchant on eBay?
Yes.
Ever wanted to do that?
Absolutely.
Well, you know where people
every day.
You know where people are going to learn quirky topics like this?
No, that's a school?
No, online classes. 3.2 million students are enrolled online to take hobby and interest classes.
Really?
They're growing in popularity, and so the notion of lifelong learning, whether it's for professional advancement or personal edification, is becoming completely mainstream.
Cool.
So you name the topic that you want to go study, and you can pretty much find a class that teaches you all about it. For example, Penn State is offering, their Department of Meteorology is offering a certificate in weather forecasting.
Oh.
Most of the people are not seeking to do it as a professional goal. They're not trying to get on TV. They're farmers or nurses or sailors or emergency volunteers.
Sailors.
And they just want to learn for learning's sake.
How many sailors are there?
I know. But it's kind of odd.
They're swashbucklers.
That's right.
Hey, matey.
I'm a pirate and I want to learn about meteorology.
We have a friend coming in, Captain.
So, quirky classes such as this typically cater to curious minds who are inquisitive about learning about this topic of interest.
Gretchen, how good would that look on my resume?
That you're a weather forecaster? That you're a top eBay merchant?
Yes.
No, here's the one that I think you should sign up for, called Popular Music. It's an examination of roots, development, and significance of popular music in our culture, taught at Penn State's World Campus, and it goes over all genres of music. And you don't need to be a musical genius, but it just focuses on American music throughout the years. And you can get a certificate in that.
A certificate. Look at, I got a certificate in this. Give me a job.
In popular music.
Job. Give me a job as a recording artist. Look at my certificate.
Oh, gosh. So here's this other one. These are some of the other ones. I mean, talk about whatever you're interested in. How to become a celebrity personal assistant. Mm. You can go online and take classes about that. how to marry a millionaire. Real estate loopholes. eBay 101, which is a 6-week class teaching you everything about digital photography, post-sales management.
Wow.
Pricing and shipping. Get Funny. Here at the University of North Texas, you can take a mini course in stand-up comedy for 6 weeks.
Well, no, they've been having that for years. Well, like I've got friends in L.A. that have taken, you know, comedian classes. And I got a friend of mine in Dallas that does it, too.
But I think they go to an actual class, right?
Right.
This you sit online and do it.
But I think that would be weak. I think you want to have the audience.
Yeah, I think for that one, you sort of need. Yeah. There's another one called How to Start Your Own T-Shirt Line. It's offered by the Learning Annex for $12.99.
Like, who needs T-shirts? Boring.
How about medical terminology, a word association approach?
Wow.
And then theme park engineering. So anything your little heart desires, you can find it online.
For the benefit of Mr. Kite, there will be a show tonight on trampoline. Hendersons will all be there. Late of Pablo Bank is there. What a scene. Over men and horses, hoops and garters, lastly through a hogshead of real fire. In this way, Mr. K will challenge the world. The celebrated Mr. K performs his feat on Saturday at Bishop's Gate.
Well, have you heard about the new Michael Moore movie coming out?
Oh, I have.
You
Looking
have.
Looking forward to it, yeah.
This is called Sicko, and it's all about Gretchen.
Nope. Yeah, thank you.
Hey-yo! No, it's a really supposed to be a good movie, and it was just shown at Cannes, and it got audience just standing ovations to it.
Even Republicans.
Even Republicans, which is never done at Cannes. They don't even really clap that much. But
I didn't think they were allowed in.
He's asking why 50 million Americans, 9 million of them children, live without coverage. While those that are insured are often driven to poverty by spiraling costs or wrongly refused treatment at all.
I thought it was focusing on the ones that had it, but the companies refused to pay.
It looks like it's a combination of both.
Mm-hmm.
The movie, which has taken Cannes by storm, goes further by portraying a country where the government is more interested in personal profit and protecting big business than caring for its citizens, many of whom cannot afford health insurance. And Moore says, I'm trying to explore bigger ideas and bigger issues. And in this case, the bigger issue in this film is, who are we as a people? Why do we behave the way we behave? What has become of us? Where is our soul?
Ooh.
Yeah. Now, he does this, though. It sounds like he uses humor and tragic personal stories. I like that combination.
You love to laugh at someone's misfortune, right?
Exactly. Why do we watch Jerry Springer? But he uses those vehicles to get his point across. And the packed audience was just laughing in times, and then they were in tears at times. Unfortunately, it's not when he wanted them to be in those two things.
Oh.
No, just kidding. So you'll literally laugh and you'll cry. I thought this was interesting. One of the most controversial passages of the film is compares health benefits in the United States to that which Islamic militant suspects received at Guantanamo in Cuba. And he's saying, basically Moore is saying, is you're telling me that the Al-Qaeda detainees are receiving better health care, that people that helped participate in the attacks of 9/11 are receiving better health care from us than those who went down to rescue those who suffered and died in 9/11. So, a lot of controversy there. But apparently, you know, he was on Bill Maher. I think you saw that.
Mm-hmm.
And he was saying, surprisingly, Republicans were coming up to him, or conservatives, I should say, were coming up to him in tears, saying, this is really, really important, and we're glad you made this movie. So I don't know.
And everybody featured in it eventually got their bills paid. Did you hear
oh,
that?
Oh, no, I didn't hear that, really. So this is supposed to hit America in, it looks like the 29th of this month, so at the end of the month.
The end of May.
Not end June. Of June.
The June, end of June?
Yeah, oh, June 29th.
No wonder I was looking for it and couldn't find it.
Oops. Oops, can't find it.
Can't find it yet.
There, that's why you're a sicko. So, I obviously I will go see it, and I encourage our audience to go see it. I think I the political winds, not that I can read the winds at all, but it does seem like there's a lot of convergence growing in the area of some sort of healthcare reform, and then it's getting out of control in this country. And this movie may very well be a catalyst to that.
Aren't we the only civilized Western nation that does not have healthcare for everyone?
That's what he kind of suggested on Bill Maher. I haven't researched that out.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure we are the only ones.
Yeah. And, you know, he raises a good question. Where is our soul? Who are we as people? What is the function of what we're trying to do here? Only do we want to live in a society where the rich are given the ability to have healthcare? That's kind of what it gets down to. And, you know, those are tough questions.
Right. So
they really aren't tough questions. They should be obvious, but
it is an issue for, well, some people are trying to make it an issue for the next campaign.
Yeah.
But it's not getting all that much press.
I don't think it's going to.
Until Iraq is settled, I don't think.
I would find it very difficult that a candidate in this political climate that comes out against healthcare for all would do very well. I mean, even companies are getting.
But remember when Bill and Hillary tried to do it in 93?
I know.
92, 93?
But maybe that wasn't the right time, and maybe
that's true.
Because right now,
so much
not right now,
timing.
The citizens and the business leaders
are
seeing tremendous cost increases that are just unsustainable.
And where is the money going to come from? Wow, if we weren't spending $750 million a day at war, I wonder if we could actually give us all health care.
Right. So anyways, I have another health news.
Okay.
And this is very interesting and kind of scary to me personally. There's a big study here where this, who is it? Dr. Craig Newgard of Oregon Health and Science University in Portland reported these findings Wednesday to the Society of the Academic Emergency Medicine meeting in Chicago. And he studied 11 years, 65,000 front seat passengers. And he found that the car airbags are risky for tall and small people.
Really?
Mm-hmm. So he found that the airbags modestly, he puts in quotes, they're modestly protective for people of medium stature, which he describes as 5'3" to 5'11". And they appear to increase the risk of injury to people smaller than 4'11" and taller than 6'3". And you were just asking me a question off the air about why is that? You know, does it hit you in the wrong place? And this article doesn't contain that. So I guess it probably does hit you in the wrong place. So
or maybe it doesn't protect you at all.
Or maybe it doesn't protect you at all. But it's actually riskier for me. I mean, it's better for me not to have an airbag, is what this is saying.
Well, I guess you just need to.
Because I'm 6'4".
You need to get in the back seat then.
Well, it's funny you say that because I'm getting to that. Another observation he made is that body weight was not a contributing factor at all to injury rates. Now, this is potentially an important observation because apparently there are many smart airbags that car manufacturers are putting out these days that use body weight to determine how an airbag deploys. So his study, again, this is just one study, but he used a heck of a lot of data.
A lot of people, yeah.
He's showing that body weight doesn't have anything to do with it. So he's got some advice. He said for passengers, if you happen to be tall or small stature and you have a choice, riding in the back is the smarter choice.
Huh.
Not only because of the airbag issue, but he says in general, there's a lot of other research that suggests that the back seat is a safer place.
Wow. Back seat with a seatbelt.
So back seat for me from now on.
There you go.
And that makes me feel a little bit like a king anyway.
And you're chauffeur driven.
Yes.
Shepherd-driven Honda.
So for drivers, there are fewer options. He said for those that are either small or tall drivers, the current recommendations are to try to sit as far away from the airbag, at least 12 inches, as possible. But probably what needs to happen is to allow people fitting those statures to have an airbag on-off switch installed in the vehicle.
Well, there you go.
So it's very interesting, kind of scary.
Or I bet at some point maybe they will design them for people like that. You know, like how they move, have gas pedals
yeah.
that move?
Yeah.
For shorter people, you know, maybe they'll
yeah.
do that once.
Well, that's another alternative because I wouldn't imagine they'd want to get rid of airbags completely.
No.
But how do you make them safe for me? So now I'm worried. Actually, my airbag light is on in my car, and I like it that way. It means they're not functioning. So now I know I don't need to get that fixed.
Remind me not to get in your car since I fit in that median height, and I'll
die. Or you better get in the back seat.
No, that's reserved for you.
Yeah, I need to learn how to drive from the back seat. That would solve my problems.
Oh, did you hear about the survey that Money Magazine did? They asked the question, what would you do for money? And they surveyed 1,000 people, half men and half women.
Yeah.
They wanted to take a look at thinking and behavior when it comes to money and moral issues. So would you flirt with the boss to get ahead? Or would you report a $2,000 bank error? What would people do for money? And the results of the survey are actually pretty interesting. But one of the most interesting things I thought was 10 times more men than women would sleep with their boss to get ahead.
Ten times more men. Yeah, duh. Is she hot?
3 out of 4 people gave themselves top grades when they were asked, "Are you ethical?" 3 out of 4 people said yes.
Sure.
They were almost like a 10 on the scale. 1 out of 5 respondents said that they would keep money if banks accidentally put $2,000 into their account. 1 out of 6 said that they would never repay a loan from a friend or a relative.
Never repay a loan.
1 out of 6 said that they would return an item to a store that they had already used. And 1 out of 25 admitted that they had stolen expensive tools or supplies from the office.
Wow.
God, I thought that was really unbelievable.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. 85% said that they would never walk into a second movie if they hadn't paid for it. And 92% said that it's wrong to share confidential information from a past job. And everybody, men and women, both agreed that women are more honorable than men when it comes to ethics. They both said that.
Yeah, I don't doubt that. I think historically, you could probably, I don't know, you could probably write a book about historical importance of cheating and
right.
success. And I'll bet there's a very positive correlation. And in other words, in general, we've probably been rewarded for it. And
women are more likely to play by the rules and to express concern about ethical issues.
The yin and the yang. That's why we need women. Keep us in check.
That is why.
Yeah.
10 times more likely to sleep with their boss. You people.
You people.
You men.
It's not me.
Okay.
I mean, it depends on if the boss was a hot chick. Right? I mean, that's what they didn't ask there. We probably wouldn't sleep with her to get ahead. It would just be, we'd sleep with her. Well, you know, it's interesting. I heard an article in NPR, and this is very interesting to me. You know, we don't know too much about the Neanderthals. But did you know that the Neanderthals and the human species, we actually don't come from the same DNA? We don't come from the same stream?
Oh, I think I did hear that.
We're different.
Yes.
We beat the Neanderthals.
We are related to the apes, though.
Right.
Right.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
But we beat the Neanderthals. They were bigger and thuggier and more, like, you know, tough and had better weapons, but apparently we had more advanced brains and smaller and more wily, and we beat them.
And the opposable thumb.
And the opposable. Well, did Neanderthals not have the opposable?
I don't know. I don't remember either. Yeah, maybe they did.
But, I mean, you know, they could buy one at the Neanderthal Walmart, I'm sure. But one of the things, and I can't remember how this came up exactly in context, but the guy who they were interviewing with did mention that violence is in our DNA as well. And there's a lot to be said about the reasons why we do sort of fight, because it's somehow in us.
Wow.
It's probably stronger impulse to do that than it is to have diplomacy. So anyway, thought that was kind of interesting.
Actually, I have something that's really similar to that.
Yeah.
There was a really interesting opinion, and it's actually based on a survey about why are we not happy as a country? And why is it we can never have enough? Basically, why can't we get any satisfaction is what this guy was asking.
I want to get a seven-bedroom house.
So we have life, liberty, but the pursuit of happiness isn't going so well. They're saying that as a country, we are richer than ever. 30 years ago, studies now show that we are no more happier today than 30 years ago, even though we are richer today. As you're talking about the big seven-bedroom house, the key is we aren't very good at figuring out what makes us happy.
Well, that's straight out of my book.
Well, that's right. Yeah. And so the research has suggested that everybody says, well, kids are our greatest joy, but the research says as soon as you have kids, the couples report lower happiness because they're struggling with all the daily pressures of the kid. And they're looking at why do we keep striving to be happy and what are the issues? And one of them is what you're talking about there, the Neanderthals, is that we weren't built to be happy. We were built to survive and reproduce.
Right.
That's what we were built to do. We weren't necessarily built to say that we're going to be happy. And they're saying that it's an incentive scheme for the benefit of our genes. It's a fundamental trick, this idea of perpetual bliss. So it's not hardwired into our basic genes. Like you're saying, violence is and reproduction is, but that's it. So working hard and raising kids may not make us happier.
Well, this book that I'm reading that I haven't talked about yet in the podcast because I'm only halfway through and I just have trouble finding the time to finish it. I will finish it when I take my trip next week. But it's all about that, you know, and it's very similar in vain. It kind of says that we think too much about the future and we think about what's going to make us happy in the future. I got to get married, got to have kids, got to find the right job.
Mm-hmm.
I got to get a bigger house. We think about the future, but in actuality, we do a really lousy job of predicting what will give us happiness.
Yes, we're bad at forecasting.
Yeah,
that's exactly right.
We're bad at forecasting. So it's probably from the same kind of source.
Right. They asked university students in the Midwest and in Southern California who they thought would be happier. And both groups, the Midwest and Southern California, picked California, in large part because of the better weather.
Yeah.
Yet they asked both groups, how satisfied are you with your own lives? And both groups were equally happy. One lived in great weather, one lived in sort of bad weather.
Yeah.
And it turns out that you have to think about how you spend your day-to-day life when you're doing your chores, you're in the grocery store, you know, you're in the single grocery store. And so you're supposed to emphasize the differences that are easy to observe and they forget about the similarities.
Right, right.
So, yeah, and we also, depending on what's going to predict us, what's going to make us happy, is influenced how we feel today.
Right.
So if we're feeling good today, we're going to feel good about the future. Which is interesting.
Yeah, that is interesting.
Mm-hmm. So exactly what he's saying is that we don't, you know, we think we're going to, you know, going to get this and this and this, but it's how what your daily life is.
Yeah, and like I said, I haven't finished the books. So I don't know all the conclusions, but it's sort of suggesting that don't think too much about the future. Don't overthink it because we do a lousy job of predicting what will make us happy. And shuffle things up a little bit in your life. Explore some things. Because
an offbeat online class.
The idea of you kind of stumble into happiness sometimes. Because you can't predict it. Gretchen, you can say, I'm going to set myself up. I'm going to study for a week to understand myself.
Mm-hmm.
And set myself up for future happiness. And you'll fail miserably doing it. Sometimes you just got to get out there and stumble into it.
That's true.
Because you don't know what it's going to be.
Mm-hmm.
So with that, that's our advice from Jeff and Gretchen today. And I expect our listeners to be happier because of that. We're happy. We're happy because you listen to us. Right?
Yes. So should we say goodbye?
Yeah, I'm just looking for the phone number.
Oh. always on the tip of our tongue.
I'm a little disheveled today. Our phone number here at the studio is 206-337-1670. That's 206-337-1670. You'll get a recording, give us a comment, and we'll play it on the air, as long as it's clean and constructive and has a lot of compliments about Gretchen and myself.
Yeah, like your Viagra subject lines.
Yeah, that's not...
Nice and clean.
Yeah, that's right. And I hope everybody has a great week or two. Who knows when we'll be back. But we'll be back soon.
Probably in 2 weeks.
Probably in 2 weeks. All right, kids. Be safe.
Bye.
And be happy. Bye.
Bye.
saw the photograph. He blew his mind out in a car. He didn't notice that the lights had changed.